Well, my plan today is to finish 2 Chronicles 30 after a week's rest from Chronicles and to start chapter 31. And you'll notice there are 36 chapters in Chronicles. Since we've been doing about a chapter a week, that means 6 more weeks. So that, you know, doesn't mean we're in the home stretch, but you can see the home stretch from here, something like that. Anyway, I'd like to read, we didn't quite finish chapter 30 2 weeks ago, so I'd like to read the last part of that. Remember, the context in 2 Chronicles 30 is under the reign of Hezekiah and the reformation of worship. There was also the restoration of the observance of the Passover and a grand festival. And after that time is what verse 23 is talking about, immediately after that. So 2 Chronicles 30, verse 23. Then the whole assembly agreed to keep the feast another 7 days, and they kept it another 7 days with gladness. For Hezekiah, king of Judah, gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 7,000 sheep. And the leaders gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 10,000 sheep. And a great number of priests sanctified themselves. Then the whole assembly of Judah rejoiced, also the priests and Levites, all the assembly that came from Israel, the sojourners who came from the land of Israel, and those who dwell in Judah. So there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the time of Solomon the son of David, king of Israel, there had been nothing like this in Jerusalem. Then the priests, the Levites, arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard, and their prayer came up to his holy dwelling place, to heaven. And I'd also like to read the first verse of chapter 31. Now when all this was finished, all Israel who were present went out to the cities of Judah and broke the sacred pillars in pieces, cut down the wooden images, and threw down the high places and the altars from all Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh, until they had utterly destroyed them all. Then all the children of Israel returned to their own cities, every man to his own possession. Now, as I mentioned already, there was a great celebration of the Passover in the earlier part of chapter 30, as the last verse of the chapter says, the next to the last verse, verse 26, there had been nothing like this in Jerusalem. It was a great celebration with a large group of people, even people from the northern kingdom who had been separated from them for some time because of the first king of this northern kingdom, Jeroboam. So in the context of that great rejoicing and celebration, then in verse 23, there's a description that they decided to worship together for 7 more days. And it doesn't really, I think, in the original say that they were keeping the feast, although the New King James supplies that phrase in italics. The idea is that they're gathered already to worship, and they are so struck by God's providence and what he brought about for them that they take these as special days of thanksgiving and celebration for what God has done. And that's an emphasis, of course, to the whole thing, the rejoicing, right? I mentioned that when we looked at the earlier part of the chapter, but just notice at the end of verse 23, they kept it with gladness. In verse 25, the whole assembly rejoiced. Verse 26, there was great joy in Jerusalem. Right? This wasn't a heavy, burdensome sort of thing. They were glad that this happened. And Matthew Henry points out that later on, probably in the time when this the book of Chronicles would have been written, in Malachi, for example, he says, the people say, what a weariness this is. They can hardly wait for the thing to be over. They're so tired of the worship of God. And there's a complete contrast here that they're so full of gladness that they want to stay together another 7 days. Now, in terms of the extraordinary nature of that, this is like, for example, what's described in the Westminster Assembly's Directory for Public Worship, that on certain occasions when the evidence of God's providence and blessing is so clear that it's appropriate to call for a day of thanksgiving. And Matthew Henry sets out, I think, pretty well some of the things that made it extraordinary. This is a somewhat long quote, but in commenting on verse 23, Matthew Henry says this: the case was extraordinary, and then he lists several things. They had been long without the ordinance, that is, of worship especially, Passover. Guilt had been contracted by the neglect of it. They had now got a very great congregation together and were in a devout, serious frame. They knew not when they might have another such opportunity, and therefore they could not now find in their hearts to separate till they had doubled the time. So I thought that was a good statement of the reasons that are behind this decision to celebrate in this way, and to stay together for seven more days to praise God. It would have been an expensive thing to do, right? You've already planned a trip, got 7 days worth of things. How are you going to come up with seven more? And I think that's part of what's behind Hezekiah's provision, although this could be, especially for the worship, it may be broader than that, and supplying for the needs of the people in just to supply their need for food. In any case, you get the impression both here and, as we'll see in chapter 31, that Hezekiah is very generous in his support of the worship of God, and I think in this case also of the needs of the people in their attendance on worship. Excuse me. I don't think there's a lot more I wanted to comment on in this last part. Let me point out an interesting notation. The in verse 25, there's a mention of the sojourners. That word may be translated in other translations, aliens, or these are not the kinds with the greenhorns and the spots, you know. We're all so sober this morning, I thought I'd see if we can get a sleep. Okay. You know, there is provision in Exodus chapter 12 at the institution of the Passover that if the alien who is among you wants to celebrate the Passover, then he can, basically, if he becomes a Jew, if he's circumcised and then his household is part of the covenant community. And although it's not completely clear, it seems it's the same word that's used here, sojourners, as is used in Exodus 12 and elsewhere, to describe these, you might say, the converts to the true religion. And that's probably what's described here. So great a time of blessing was it that there were even these people who came in to worship the true God, not only from the north, those are mentioned, but also presumably the Gentiles who were converted to serve God. So that's an interesting point there. And the other thing I'd like to point out is in verse 27 is this blessing by the priests. The priests who were Levites blessed the people. And of course that's referred to in the book of Numbers. The famous Aaronic benediction, the Lord bless you and keep you, would be the special text in the Old Testament blessing of the people. And it was a blessing indeed, because you see what happened at the end of verse 27. Their voice was heard. Their prayer came up to his holy dwelling. And there again is the emphasis that the temple, they knew well enough, the temple wasn't really the dwelling place of God. The earthly temple, they didn't believe, could somehow contain God. Their prayers went up to heaven, to God's presence itself in a special sense. And there's something throughout this whole account of a reminiscing of the blessings under David and Solomon. So if you look back to Solomon's dedication of the temple, there, too, they stayed together an extra time. And that's in 2 Chronicles chapter 7 that there's a mention made that they, so great was the rejoicing that they stayed together an extra time. And remember, part of Solomon's prayer was that the Gentiles would come in. And there's also the emphasis that God heard their prayer. There it was shown in a very visible way, his accepting of their worship by the cloud that entered the temple. So there's much in this that's intended to remind us that the faithful king will have the glory of Solomon and the blessing that Solomon and David had. And that's part of the language. So that was sort of left over from 2 weeks ago. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Dave? Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I meant to include that. This is one of the cases where probably the chapter division, which is relatively recent, is not as helpful as it could be. The description in verse 1 of chapter 31 ties in really with what happened. It says, when this was accomplished, they went forth. So should I make some comments on it, and then you want to say something about it?
I have a couple of questions.
Okay. We'll see if I answer them ahead of time. You remember there were already two purgings of idolatry. There was first the purging of the temple idolatry at the very beginning of Hezekiah's reign. And then later on when they were gathering, well, it's just in the earlier part of chapter 30, when they were gathering to worship God, they cleansed Jerusalem, that is the vicinity around where they would be gathering for worship. Ahaz, Hezekiah's father, had completely overturned the worship of the Lord, and you might say he'd gone through the catalog and found every other god he could worship and added him in instead. It was a very, very corrupt time. And so this is really, you might say, the completion of that. This is the third phase of the purging from the monuments of idolatry. And that here they go through not only the land of Judah, but it seems even those who are returning to the northern kingdom are purging the idolatry that's at least in their own households. And it's not clear how much further that goes. Now, this does raise a question. I mean, to what extent can someone go and destroy someone else's property? And I think it's helpful at this point to, although I'm not going to take time to do it, to look at the cross-reference in Kings where it says that Hezekiah cut down, got rid of the idolatry. So it would seem that these people were acting as agents of the state, basically, to cleanse the idolatry, at least that was publicly remaining. And that's the way in which I would understand what's going on here. I mean, if you've like listen to Jeff's class, or remember in the time of the Reformation, there were controversies because sometimes people went wild and they just, you know, went around smashing idolatry in places that didn't belong to them, and it was just mob violence. Comparing this with Kings, I would say that's not what's going on, but it's not completely clear. I think if you just look at the verse itself, what authority they had to do what they did, if it was a public removal. Did you have other comments on it?
I was curious, was this text used to justify the mob rule at times?
I was curious about that, and I couldn't find anything. I doubt that the people who were involved in the mob violence particularly sought texts. It was the leaders like Luther and Calvin who discouraged that kind of thing. They were well in favor of ultimately removing the monuments of idolatry, as they would have called it. But it was when they had the authority to do so, and not based on mob violence. So I kind of doubt that there was an official use of the text. But it's an interesting question, and none of the commentaries, even the older ones, really said much about this point.
It's a long journey.
Right. There's a stress. They go up to Ephraim and Manasseh, which could well be comprehensive for the northern kingdom. At this point, whatever civil authority there was in the north was very weak. Okay, so that's the conclusion then of the first part, and now I'd like to turn to chapter 31, you might say, proper. And let me read it, picking up at verse 2. Chapter 31, verse 2. Then Hezekiah appointed the divisions of the priests and the Levites according to their divisions, each man according to his service, the priests and Levites for burnt offerings and peace offerings, to serve, to give thanks, and to praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord. The king also appointed a portion of his possessions for the burnt offerings, for the morning and evening burnt offerings, the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths and the new moons and the set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Lord. Moreover, he commanded the people who dwelt in Jerusalem to contribute support for the priests and the Levites, that they might devote themselves to the law of the Lord. As soon as the commandment was circulated, the people of Israel brought in abundance, the first fruits of grain and wine, oil and honey, and of all the produce of the field, and they brought in abundantly the tithe of everything. And the children of Israel and Judah, who dwelt in the cities of Judah, brought the tithe of oxen and sheep, also the tithe of holy things, which were consecrated to the Lord their God. They laid in heaps. In the third month they began laying them in heaps, and they finished in the seventh month. And when Hezekiah and the leaders came and saw the heaps, they blessed the Lord and his people Israel. Then Hezekiah questioned the priests and the Levites concerning the heaps. And Azariah the chief priest from the house of Zadok answered him and said, "Since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have plenty left, for the Lord has blessed his people, and what is left is this great abundance." Now Hezekiah commanded them to prepare rooms in the house of the Lord, and they prepared them. And they faithfully brought in the offerings, the tithes, and the dedicated things. Conaniah the Levite had charge of them, and Shimei his brother was the next. Jehiel, Azaziah, Nahath, Azahel, Jeremoth, Jozabad, Eliel, Ismachiah, Mahath, and Benaiah were overseers under the hand of Cananiah and Shimei his brother, at the commandment of Hezekiah the king and Azariah the ruler of the house of God. Korah the son of Imna the Levite, the keeper of the east gate, was over the freewill offerings to God, to distribute the offerings of the Lord and the most holy things. And under him were Eden, Miniamin, Jeshua, Shemaiah, Amariah, and Shechaniah, his faithful assistants in the cities of the priests, to distribute allotments to their brethren by divisions, to the great as well as the small. Besides those males from 3 years old and up who were written in the genealogy, they distributed